Melbourne on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to The Science of Sport at 6 minutes past 10 o'clock in the thriving metropolis of Melbourne and all around Australia, of course, via the interwebs. Jackie Lauder joins me. Mark Fabreo doesn't. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
How's it?
It's good. I've said to someone the other day, you never really get a quiet start to the year anymore. There's no such thing. I feel like we have a few days off for Christmas and New Year and then you're back into everything.
Speaking of quiet, I was watching a show last night called Tiny Homes.
Oh, yes, I've seen
that. Have you ever seen that thing?
That's a massive show through the States.
Well, there's an Australian version. There's a US version. I watched one of the US ones last night. It's just like showing us flats.
They do a great job, though. Like, amazing what they can put into a tiny space. But how long can you live in there?
Well, they had this joint up on the Sunshine Coast in the hinterland a little bit. And yep. It was three squares. So, I mean, as big as this studio, not a lot bigger than this studio. And, but it was beautiful. Yeah. And it was set up on stilts in the trees. And apart from the fact that it was tiny, it had a veranda, which would have been a one square, I guess. And, you know, obviously there's one living area and one bedroom and a bathroom. But I thought I wouldn't want to be there forever, but I would love to be able to go there for a month to chill out. Go up there a couple of times a year, or had everything,
had
internet access, had obviously electricity and all the amenities necessary for life in the modern bloody era. But I thought I would love something like that to be able to wind down. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I put a post on Facebook about somebody asks me, you're so busy. How do you de-stress? What do? How do you switch off?
How do you switch off?
Well, I'll tell you in a moment, and I want to ask you about switching off. So about 5 years ago, my front yard looked like a horrible, barren wasteland.
I remember.
Of crap, right? Of ugly, random outdoor bits and pieces, dead grass, a couple of concrete slabs. It was like just really a place that...
It was average.
Super average. And it was really just the space between my driveway and my front door that I tried not to look at. And then
you actually have quite a bit of space.
Yeah. And I had a moment in time. If you want to see what it looks like, just go to Facebook, Craig Harper, and you'll see me scroll down a little bit. And I thought, I'm going to build something that I really like. And anyway, the quick version is I built this little sanctuary of bamboo and kind of an outdoor meditation office area hut. And it, when you're in it, it doesn't look like at all like you're in suburbia.
No.
But for me... And now bamboo grows ridiculous, as you know, and I don't have the running type folks, so no, it's not knocking my house down or pulling up the pavements, but a lot of it's about 40 feet high now.
I know. When I've driven past your place, I can see.
So when
just trees.
So when you were stalking me or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So when I look out, even from upstairs, you can't see the street. You can't see any shops. You can't see – all you can see is green.
Oh, even from upstairs now?
Even from upstairs, yeah.
Wow.
So for me, my off switch is nature, whether that's – I live about 800 metres from the beach as well, so whether or not that's soft sand, feet, toes in sand, whether or not it's noise of the water or the waves, or whether or not it's, you know, just a green screen outside my office.
Yep.
I think it's really important. And I think one man who might need such an off switch is Nick Kyrgios.
Maybe, yes.
Terrible segue. But is it? Do you think that
it's
he has...
a topic this week, hasn't
does he have an off switch?
Do
we need... Do athletes need an off switch?
Yeah, for sure. Humans. So athletes are humans. Like, we may not think it sometimes with some of the things that they can do, but everybody needs an off switch. And I think, you know... One of the things that you said is the environment that we put ourselves in physically as well as mentally, and the people that we put around us makes a big difference to, you know, how well relaxed we are. But yeah, I have a very different opinion about him, I think, than most people who get frustrated. I actually feel quite sad watching him and listening to some of his interviews. I really see the struggle that he's going through. I think he likes the game of tennis, but I think he struggles with what comes with that and how to manage all of that. And he's only just 21, so he has a lot of responsibilities to his family and to himself. And you know, to a sport, you and I could do 1,000 things right and we do one thing wrong. We say one thing that annoys somebody on air and they'll hang us for one comment, but they don't know we may have had no sleep or we may be sick or there might be something stressful going on in our lives. And that's the thing I think we need to remember with elite athletes all the time. What you see is not necessarily giving you accurate knowledge. So you need to just recognize
back
something
to,
else.
Back to your point of, you know, what we might say on air, let's just draw that out to what we might say in life, all of us. Like I always say to my clients, the people that I work with, I'm sure you say something, your version of, like, my intentions are not the other person's experience.
Correct.
So I might be saying something that I think is helpful and or supportive and or valuable in terms of what they're doing or dealing with, but what they're getting is judgment and criticism and negativity. And so, you know, that's part of the, I guess, the process of, you know, like being an athlete, like you said, being a human being, well, yeah, it's about tennis and it's about running quick and hitting balls and having speed and power and flexibility, but it's also about being the human being in the middle of all of that, the emotional, volatile, cerebral, creative, you know, spiritual creature that you are, and then try to, you know, immerse yourself in the process of being awesome at a sport.
Yeah, and I think we're very privileged. We get to watch the athlete's experience, but we've now come to a position where we think it's our right to watch it and it's our right to judge it and try and dictate it, and that's not the case. Like, you know, you get...
That's always going to happen, though. People are always going to judge it.
Yeah, it is. But I think, too, there's a lot of different media outlets that are not helping the situation because they are talking about, oh, tell us what annoys you about him and all that. And I'm like, that's just making it worse. You're effectively bullying a 21-year-old. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. He's got to be given... You know, if we're talking about Nick Kyrgios, he's got to be given an opportunity to figure out who he is as a person. And yes, we might look at the behaviour and make comment, which is the media's job, but to then create more around it and ask people for comments, what annoys you about him, I just don't think that's helpful. I wouldn't appreciate it if it was me, and I don't feel comfortable bullying a 21-year-old.
Well, I think that the thing that we all do unconsciously is we look at other people's words or behaviours or whatever through our filter, through our version of right, our version of wrong, our value system, our beliefs, our expectations. And we go, all right, he's X.
Yep.
Well, no, that's your label for him. That's
also
your label. And that's okay. Yeah. But just because you think he's awesome or the opposite of awesome doesn't make it so. And, you know, but we love to jump on this stuff.
Yeah, but I couldn't imagine in his position. I feel for him in terms of he knows that when he goes out there, everyone's just waiting for him to screw up. There's a huge amount of people that are doing that. That's an awful thing to have to go to work every day knowing that everyone's just waiting for you to screw up and not necessarily going to give you praise for various things. But I think too, if I see you do something, I know for me, if I was doing that, this is what it would mean. So I assume that it means the same thing when I see you do it.
Yeah.
And that's how people are judging. So, you know, I think we all need to be very aware of we don't always have all of the information. And you might talk about it in small groups, but I think we have a responsibility if we have a public forum that, like we do here, you try and look at both sides and educate and, you know, allow people some insight because we are very privileged in elite sport that we get to see, you know, and get to know some of these amazing athletes. But our job, I think, is to educate and say, let's look at it across the board and not just the reactive. Let's try and respond and educate.
Off the SMS, by the way, if you want to send us a message, 0433 98 11 16. I'll say that a bit slower. 0433 98 11 16. If you want to call us via the telephone, 9429 11 16. So, second one there, Jack. While what you're saying is true, does that excuse Nick from belittling the ball kids by telling out towel? What by telling out towel? By bullying them and degrading them.
No, of course it doesn't. Like, I'm not saying his behavior is acceptable. What I'm saying is I think that it is an ongoing process of education with him and learning and understanding with him. So absolutely not. It doesn't excuse it. And I don't like to see it. I sit there going, oh, really? Are we still here? And it frustrates me that whoever is around him, that we're not making progress. with this, but I also understand that it's a process and hopefully it's continuing and he gets better and better. But no, it's not an excuse.
We seem to, and I say this guardedly because this is just my view from looking out of the Craig hole, we seem to have a disproportionate number of tennis players who seem to show this behaviour much more than, say, swimmers or much more than, say, you know, AFL players, or like you'll never or rarely see somebody essentially or apparently anyway, you know, throw in the towel, spit the dummy, crack it, you know, whereas why do we seem to have a lot of and often male tennis players who just lose their stuff?
Well, I think it's, I don't know, it's an interesting question, but they're in an individual sport where there's only two people on the court and they don't have access through their competitive time. So when they're actually on court, they are not allowed to get feedback or coaching or go and ask someone, or they don't have a teammate to just say, you know, don't worry about it, let's pick it up, let's keep going. I think in team sports, there's so much more support during those competitive minutes. Mm. Whereas when we send a tennis player out there, they are not allowed to have that. They're literally now out there on their own. Mm. So it's a very different perspective. So maybe it's that. I don't know. It's a really good question.
Let's go to Scott in Cranbourne if you want to be just like Scott. 94291116. G'day, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Love the show.
Thanks. You.
Just talk about Nick Kyrgios. I think it's a rather sad situation where you got a young kid with all the ability in the world, and he's got potential to be a top 10 player consistently. However, I just feel that he lacks any sort of direction from a mature body, whether it be a coach or a mentor. And further, if you heard his press conference the other night,
yep,
after he lost, he actually stated himself that perhaps he should start taking his pre-season more seriously. So therein lies the question that he needs to ask himself, do I really want to be a professional tennis player? Mm. Second point, what's going to take for me to get that top 10 ranking and maintain it on a consistent basis? And if I do have a meltdown on the court, how do I control it myself?
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Scott. I think that the guidance and the people around him, and this is probably the benefit that our 18-year-old footballers get, is from the moment they come in, they're surrounded by a whole heap of coaches. They have, whether that be a psychologist, a dietitian, you know, they've got physios, they've got doctors, they've got marketing people and media people. So they get taught very, very quickly from the time of 18 and they're accountable to teammates. But I agree with Scott. I think we have to look at who's around him and hopefully that improves.
I agree with Scott in that he doesn't seem to have a passion to play tennis. Like it doesn't like there's nothing evident to me anyway that says I really love tennis. I really want to play tennis. It's more
he hasn't seemed to verbalise it that way. Has he?
It seems to be more tolerated than celebrated. Off the SMS. Troy, bloody rubbish comments. That's softly. We don't know what they're going through. Acceptance is a significant contributory factor to a world full of people without any respect. Okay, Troy.
Yeah, agree to disagree on that one.
Well, I think part of what I get where he's coming from.
He's coming from, but as a psychologist, we see this every single. My sample pool is not an N of one.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is our listeners also are allowed to have an opinion.
Correct.
And
yep,
just
agree.
Because people aren't psychologists doesn't mean they don't have any insight into human behaviour.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying. Let's go to Doug said, give me a break. This idiot Kyrgios has been funded by the Australian taxpayer, so I'm entitled to say he's an embarrassment and should never allow to be able to play for Australia. Well, Doug,
you can say
whatever you want.
Yeah.
It doesn't probably change anything, but I don't begrudge you your right to say whatever you want, and that's the beauty of the tapestry of humanity. We don't all have to agree, and wouldn't it be boring if we did? Let's go to Jack in Pakenham. G'day, Jack.
How are you guys?
Good, man.
Thanks.
One thing that's different between these young tennis players and footballers is footballers don't go into a club environment and take their family with them as their key people. Never been a professional sportsman, but they're surrounded by family, and as your main advisor, like Kyrgios' brother looks like he's an integral part of that group, and Tomic's father looks like he actually runs the show there. Just for all purposes, go along and be a spectator and cheer him and travel the world and barrack for him and do all that. But leave the actual professional stuff up to the professionals.
Yep, that's great.
And back away.
100% agree. And that is a very big difference.
Nobody
in
has brought that up.
Yeah.
That is a very insightful thing to share, Jack. Thanks for doing that with us. Look, we're going to go to a break. We're going to put tennis on hold. In fact, we're going to shelve tennis for now. And Nick, for now, we're going to talk about possibly more interesting things. Somebody very close to this show. And when I say close, folks, I mean very close. Couldn't be any closer if she wasn't in the studio, has been living on peanut butter sandwiches for a year, we found out this morning. I won't tell you who it is until after the break.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport. The Science of Sport is the name of the show, but we talk about everything, and not just sport specific, but sport related. So, yeah, we talk about Nick Kyrgios and his performance, but we also talk about carbs and bums and legs and mindset and healing and health and recovery and emotional stuff and life stuff. So it's pretty broad. Anything to do with health and wellness and performance under the banner of science and sport and general well-being, we will go there. So if you want to take us somewhere, 9429 1116 is the phone number, or the SMS is 0433 98 1116.
Or our now, Facebook.
Our Facebook.
The Science of Sport.
Science of Sport. And we had a revelation just before we came on air, Jack, and we thought we've got to chat about that.
Yeah. So Craig and I were sitting out with Jackie, our producer, outside the studio just before the show, having a chat as we do about what we're going to chat about. And then Jackie came up with an epiphany and said that, guess what I've been doing in the last 2 weeks? I've been eating protein. Craig was on his phone, looks up and stopped, and I was writing something down, and we both stopped and looked and said, I'm sorry, what did you just say? I've been eating protein. Yeah, I feel fantastic. For the last year, I've been eating peanut butter sandwiches, but I've added some chicken and some protein in the last 2 weeks and I feel amazing.
Who would have thought that having that missing macronutrient, there's only three. You've got fat, you've got carbs, you've got protein. And so essentially one third of a very important third of what she should be putting in a body she wasn't putting in. And amazingly, she feels super good.
She feels good. But it made us think about that, you know, and we obviously had a bit of a laugh and said, oh, there's this great show on SEN at 10 o'clock called The Science of Sport. You should listen.
Yeah.
Even podcasts,
yeah,
which she's the one who puts them up. But it made us realize sometimes you can have access to so much information that's fantastic, but it still comes down to you being able to put it into play and you trying some different things. And I was talking to someone else during the week and they kind of went the other way, whereas they had access to all this information and overused it. And read way too much and confused themselves and then got way too many opinions on what they should be doing with their training and with their food. And I mean, you must see it all the time as well. What do you tell your clients when they're asking for all of this information? How do you direct them?
Well, a couple of things. I think we need to, and I won't go into your space, but I would think from a psychological, from a physiological, so from a food point of view, from a training point of view, there are basics that we know are rock solid, like you need to eat well. Now, what that means is different things to different people, but I think we all agree, not much processed food, if any, not much sugar, if any, not heaps and heaps of fat, good fats, yes, and so on. And then with training, we talk about, we'll do something that's appropriate for you and something that's progressive. And then with the emotional stuff, we go, well, actually, you're not a body. You're just, you know, you're a bunch of things, but you live in a body, so you need to self-manage on a mental and emotional level. But I think beyond that, okay, well, let's tick the boxes and do the practical things that I know. Be consistent with exercise, eat well, find some downtime, try to manage my emotions, meditate, stay calm, deal with anxiety or whatever, have those strategies. But I also think that we are, while we're all the same, we're all unique.
Oh,
and
for
so
sure.
It's trying to figure out the blueprint for you.
Yep.
So I always say to people, listen, whenever I work with you, I'm taking an educated guess based on 35 years of doing the same thing or similar things with lots of people and lots of bodies.
Yep.
So I'm going to tell you where I think you should start. I don't want you to try and change 15 things. I want you to work on one or two things with your food, one or two things with your lifestyle, one or two things with your exercise, and maybe one or two things in terms of mindset. So even there is 4 to 8. That's a lot. But a lot of people have a moment, an epiphany, and try to reinvent or undo 30, 40 years of stuff by Wednesday.
Yeah.
So remember, we all have a default setting, you know, our normal operating system, which is the way that we just work, think, react, act on autopilot. And that's the kind of the default setting that over time we need to try to rewire behaviorally, emotionally, psychologically, and practically. So that's where I go. Who's on the line?
We have Richard from Malvern.
Hey, Richard.
Good morning, you both. Thank you for your show, which I really enjoy. Can I ask a question of each of you, please?
Sure.
One to Jackie, and it concerns the difference between the attitude of Sam Stosur and Nick Kyrgios. I mean, Sam Stosur, I love dearly. Mm. Just seems to sort of be accepted. So he goes to a press conference, oh, I tried, I've done everything possible, blah, 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 blah. And that just bothers me. And if I could then ask Craig a question which concerns the alleged liquid diet of Novak Djokovic and his apparent thinness, et cetera, et cetera. Could you give me some background information if you could, please?
Well, let's start with Jackie.
Yeah, I think Sam's an interesting one because all of the talk around her is that she trains hard, she looks amazing, she's a very, very strong athlete, she's a great player. And she competes amazingly well overseas. But then when she comes here, we've had a number of years where she hasn't really got the performances out of herself that we would like to be able to see or that we know that she's capable of. So there's a lot of discussion around that being more of a psychological thing for her. But I don't think it's I know that it does feel like an air of resignation, but I think she's probably exhausted from that issue being brought up all the time in Australia? That would be my opinion.
All right. Well, I'll jump in on I don't know what liquid diet he's on. And I don't know if that means that he only has liquid meals. I would think no dietitian or nutritionist in the world would recommend, unless you're the guy who owns Soylent, I don't think would recommend a liquid only diet, Richard. But
You can't possibly be an elite athlete purely on a liquid diet.
But what they do, some of them, is they have these special formulae that allegedly meet a lot of their micro and macronutrients, so fat, protein, carbs, vitamins, minerals, and it's just a convenient way for them to get that into
He's
themselves.
He's gluten-free.
Is he?
Yeah, well, he has a gluten-free diet, which he has talked about a number of times, but I don't know if it's a pure liquid diet.
No, me either. We'll try to find out a little bit about what he does inhale and give you a little bit more. But I would think, like, put it this way, I don't know that there's been anybody that's ever survived on or enjoyed or thrived on a liquid-only diet over a long period of time.
Remember that I think it was Joe Cross, and he did Fat, Sick, or Nearly Dead, and he did it for 60...
We interviewed that dude.
Yeah, we did. And he did it, I think, for 60 or 90 days, where he had all of his vegetables and everything else to lose weight and whatever. Mm. That's probably the longest I've seen anybody do it. But he also made sure before he did that, he had the medical team around him. He was getting medical checks all through, and it was an experiment that was well documented. Mm. But I don't know anyone who can survive purely on that.
Well, technically you could, but you wouldn't want to. And I don't think, you know, we still need things like fiber and we still need our digestive system to work.
Yep.
You know, we need... peristalsis, which is the kind of the muscular contractions of the colon and semicolon and the esophagus and all those things that have a function and a purpose. And if they switch off for 10 years because you're only drinking, I don't know. I'm not a surgeon. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a dietitian. But to me, that doesn't seem like a great way to go.
I've got a question for
you. Yeah, go.
We can either do it now or we can do it after a break. Okay. So
depends on if I know the answer. If I don't know the answer,
you'll know
we're
the
going
answer because it'll be about you.
Okay.
So I will give you a little bit of a leading as to why I'm asking this question.
Sure.
I see a number of clients that we have to deal with pain management. So ongoing conditions that have really started to, I guess, have a psychological impact as well, which happens with everybody. If you're dealing with an injury that has a really definite ending, we're going to put you in plaster for 6 weeks, you're going to rest for 3 weeks, we can scan it, we can see an improvement. Then the psychological component of that is far less and certainly far less intense. But when you're going through an ongoing pain condition, and this is where I refer to you, Craig, because you've been managing a bad back for a while. How do you feel when you talk about your back, say to friends or family or whatever, and everybody gives you an opinion or tells you what you should do with it?
That is a good question. I personally don't do that too much, but I get asked a lot because I have had a bad back
since
last year, like quite bad, to the point where I could hardly walk. I was on crutches for a while, had a stick for a bit, and I could hardly put my right foot on the ground without excruciating pain. I appreciate that they're coming from a good place, but I just don't let that conversation go too long.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, look, it's sorting itself out. Because I don't want to open up that door. And for me, different people want, like, you know, some people want attention around stuff. I really don't. I just, people had to be aware because there were some things I just couldn't do. Like, I was at the gym, I couldn't pick a dumbbell up off the floor.
Yeah.
And if I picked it up off the floor, I'm done. So I would have to say, I know this sounds ridiculous, but could you pass me that?
But I'm talking more about the treatment. So I've had a few conversations over my time dealing with people that are not managing pain conditions. And one of the most common things is they do get to a point where it's been going on for so long that everyone's saying, oh, I did this, I did hydro, you should try this and whatever. And I try and say to my clients, if you get that information, because everyone's well-meaning trying to, you know, tell you what to do, but it can be a lot for somebody who's been managing this for a long time.
Very true.
And I just say to them, look, find your person who is going to be your key person in managing your case. So if that's your physio, if that's your doctor, if it's your psych or your dietitian or whoever has been your main person, and use them to say, okay, I had three people this week tell me that maybe for my back I should do hydrotherapy, and go back to your physio or whatever and say, what do you think? And follow their opinion. Because if you get too many opinions about it, it can be very, very frustrating. And also too, I know a lot of people that go through ongoing pain just say, oh, well, if it was that simple, don't you think I would have thought of that? And it can be, it just adds psychologically to the management of the condition.
You know, there's a really interesting guy who was on the week that you were away on the 15th before you got back, on the 8th before you got back, I think. His name's Cal Freed. Cal Freed, he's in Brighton. His surname's spelt F-R-I-D, like fried. So if this resonates with you, jump on, just go Cal Freed and sports injury management, pain, he'll come up. He's got a really good website about this. But the thing about pain too is that it's a unique experience, and my 3 out of 10 could be your 7 out of 10 or vice versa. And I think this seems funny, but like I haven't had a pain-free day for 6 months. But like right now my pain's 2. So it's fine. But I really don't notice it. But if I talk about it, I can go, yeah, it's there. It's there. But I had so much acute, terrible pain that I love 2. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, thank God for 2.
But
two's
that's what
awesome.
Pain management is. I think a lot of people expect that when they come and see a professional, regardless of the discipline of that professional, that when they say pain management, they think pain gone. And it's not. It's can we get it to a level where you can sit with it okay, and if we can get rid of it, for sure. That's obviously what every practitioner wants to be able to help you do. But to me, the definition of pain management is going, can you manage it where you are able to function to the best level you can and do as much of the activities that you like without this getting in your way or preventing you?
Now, just quickly, before we go to the break, 2 things. One, one of our callers rang up about Djokovic having a liquid-only diet. Seems he doesn't. Jackie, our producer, found some data for me that he's intolerant to wheat and dairy and mildly sensitive to tomatoes. Stopped eating a few things, but now he follows a diet which is based primarily on vegetables, beans, white meat, fish, fruit, nuts, seeds, chickpeas, lentils, and healthy oils. And where's that from? That's from...
Yeah, so we knew he was
some
gluten-free.
Online source, yeah. So now when we come back, folks, this is something that Jackie knows this, I'm passionate about, but I'm completely unqualified. I'm just a bogan guessing in the wind. She's totally qualified. Now, for a lot of us are overthinkers. That's not a real thing. That's what I call it. Jackie calls it something else. But what that means to me, the layman, is that sometimes we think in a way that's not particularly healthy or productive, and the result of that perhaps might be a drop in skill, a drop in happiness, an increasing in anxiety or procrastination or frustration. That's a bit of it. But I want to talk to Jackie about whether or not we can change the way that we think for the better to change our results, our performance, and the quality of our existence.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada, and Mark Fabreo. So
good, I got you. Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. Mark Fabreo, the great man, is in absentia. He's in Sydney, the thriving metropolis, just saving the world, just curing diseases, and just pushing the boundaries of science with his own skinny little arms. It's what he does. It's what he does. Now, I've got a gig coming up, folks, if you're interested in the stuff that we talk about here and the stuff that I talk about specifically, which is really how to do better, create better, produce better, make your life better, health better, all that stuff. It's at Deakin Uni on March 18. If you want some info, you can go to Craig Harper, one word, craigharper.net, craigharper.net. Go to events, go to live tour, and you'll find all the stuff in there. And there's actually a discount code. So instead of paying $77 if you buy a ticket before midday today, you type in S-E-N, very creative, S-E-N, you get it for 47 buckaroonies. Can you believe that value, Jack?
Amazing.
Is that amazing?
Yeah, totally.
Are you not excited?
Amazing. I'm so excited. S-E-N. I can hardly keep myself in my chair.
CraigHarper.net. Have you bought your ticket yet?
No.
Because there's plenty you need to learn. And
is there?
I tell you what, I might see if I can get you some kind of,
on the discount?
Maybe a T-shirt or something. Maybe I'll get you a signed poster. Maybe I could do a signed poster. A selfie with you.
I could put a signed poster on my my door.
The poster that I just had done, you definitely couldn't put it up.
Right. I would be very creeped out to have a poster of you.
It's not a poster
on
me.
My door.
No, it's not a poster of me. It's one of the things I've written. All right. So we spoke about, before the break, we were talking.
Let's change our thinking.
We were talking about changing our thinking. And I know for me personally, over the years, I've had to constantly reinvent myself from the inside out because I needed to, because I was at different stages egotistical. I was fearful. I was not connecting to people the way that I wanted to because I subconsciously thought they thought like me. Because I'm being kind, and why don't they know I'm being kind? Where I was actually just being pushy or insensitive or something. So, at other times where I think I don't know if I've shared this with you, but I remember I did a gig for Channel 10 for a few years where I was doing an almost weekly gig with David and Kim, and I did it for about 3 years, and I don't know how many episodes I did, but a lot. Where, you know, now our motivation, you know, transformation bloke, whatever they called me, and I would go on and there'd be 250,000 people, about 8 minutes live. And every time before I went on, the ex-fat kid from Morwell had this overwhelming sense of, I'm a fraud, I'm not good enough. What if they find out that I'm just an ex-fat kid from Latrobe Valley? And even though I knew what to say and even though I'd done it many times, and people would never have guessed it, right? Because I could go on and talk and I could do the drill. But internally, there was always self-doubt. There was always overthinking, and it got better over time. But there was still this sense of me being a fraud, even though I knew that I could deliver.
It's a protective thing. So the number one thing your brain is there to do is it's there to keep you safe and protect you. And so that's often why when people are very negative or they have all of those self-doubts, it's because they're trying to protect themselves because they want to be able to do something, but they don't want to embarrass themselves or, you know, whether that be you going on air and worrying about all those things or, you know, a footballer lining up for a goal or somebody going out to give a speech when they know that in the audience is some very, very intelligent people that probably could also be giving that speech. We do want to protect ourselves, and that's where you go into, you know, we say there's three parts of your brain, and one part is the part where you absolutely thrive, and then there's that middle part where everything comes in, and that's your impulsive brain that initially reacts to something and then it either sends it up and says, yep, I'm okay with this, Or you go down into that survival part of your brain, and that's where we release all our stress chemicals, so our cortisol, our adrenaline. And the problem is, what I would say to clients, so if I'm talking to you about that particular situation, if I followed you around all day and all I did was ask you a whole heap of questions, what if they find out you're a fraud? What if they realize that you were a reformed fat kid, blah, blah, blah.
I'd punch you in the face.
But I never let you answer the questions. By the way, I did was ask them.
I wouldn't really, folks.
Yeah. But if I asked you the questions and I never let you answer them.
Right.
How long would it take before you'd want to punch me in the face?
Yeah.
Not very long.
No.
That's effectively what you're doing to yourself, is you're asking all of these questions, but you're never answering them. And what a lot of people don't realize is when it comes to you, you do have a lot of the answers. So, okay, worst case scenario, what if they found out in that situation that you just said that you were a reformed fat kid from Morwell?
What if
they found that out? And if you answer the question, you realize it's not that scary and you go, well, you know what? That's actually part of my story.
Yeah.
And that would help. So if someone, like we've got an SMS that's come in saying they've started an 8-week transformation program, it's the mental challenge of getting in that zone. And it's the same thing. If someone's saying, well, you know, what if at the end of that 8 weeks, I haven't done what I said I'm going to do? Okay, well, what if? What's going to happen?
Yeah.
The worst things in the world, you know, your loved ones aren't going to stop loving you. You're not going to lose your job and whatever it is. When you can diffuse it and say, okay, I'll be disappointed. Okay, that's okay. We don't want to take the emotion out of an experience, right? Because you have to have those emotions to learn from it, and that's how we value experiences, and that's how we say, oh, I don't want to do that again, or yep, I'd really love to do that again. But if someone has disappointment in their journey, there's no shame in that, and that just says that this was important to you. But emotions are temporary. They won't last because you'll move on. If you think about, you know, your best friend and something that you, a memory that you have with them where you are absolutely killing yourselves laughing. And when you think about that now, you'll have a little bit of a smile, a little bit of a chuckle, but you won't go too into the intensity of laughing like you did in that moment. So that's a memory. So it's passed, the intensity passes, and you, if you can manage those emotions and go, hang on, it's not the worst thing in the world, it's just part of the experience. Does that make sense?
Is it the thought that causes the feeling, or is it the emotion attached to the thought that causes the feeling?
It's probably that's a really hard question because everyone's wired a little bit differently. But I think it's the outcome fear that a lot of people have, which is that emotion. And then that emotion creates a whole heap of different thoughts that can then just be ongoing. It's a little bit like a snowball.
I remember, and I want to ask you for a couple of specific strategies for to help people. And again, not everything works the same for the same person. So what we're about to give you is no prescription. We're just having a conversation. And what I find curious is that this is such an important part of our existence, our reality, our relationships, our happiness. Every component of the human experience relates in some way back to thinking, yet we don't go, well, how do we get better at it? I'm not talking about being more intelligent or having a higher IQ. I'm just going, how do we think in a more healthy way? I remember, and I'm a bit embarrassed to share this, but I'm going to say it because it's just the truth. So I'm an only child, as some people know, and I would say until I was about 30, I was, and my dad's not the, my dad is a good guy, but he's not the most demonstrative, loving, warm, fuzzy type, right?
Right.
Only kid, people go, oh, only kid, you were spoiled. Yeah, I was the opposite of spoiled, right? But not, certainly not mistreated, but just there wasn't a whole lot of that mushy, lovey-dovey stuff. So I remember one day I was about 30 years old, and I'd started my business and I set up the first PT studio in Australia and it was killing it and I was going, oh, good, okay. And I just started writing for the Herald Sun and doing bits and pieces and, you know, just starting to create this little mini empire. And I got a phone call from 3AW back then before SEN was in existence and they wanted to interview me about stuff. So I did this interview, thought I was a superstar. Couldn't get on the phone fast enough to tell my dad. My dad couldn't have cared less, right? So the 30-year-old business owner, the 30-year-old grown-ass man is ringing his dad, looking for approval. And I got off the phone. I was embarrassed. I was mad at myself. I was a bit mad at him.
Why?
I just was. I felt humiliated because I realized what I'd done, right? And I just went, I'm never doing that again. And not in an angry, volatile way, not in a, I just went, I'm never doing that again.
What, look for that sense, that yes. having that sense of attachment and feedback from people whose opinions are important to you.
Yep, yep. I'm never going to look for approval. That's what I was doing.
But you're human. We all want, like...
Jackie, it doesn't work for me. I'm telling you, it doesn't work for me.
One of our key... that's a protective
no,
mechanism.
No, but do you think we should be looking for approval, though?
It's not about approval. It's about support. And it doesn't matter how old you are. Like, everything that... I have a very good relationship with my parents, and I've been very lucky.
Can I borrow them?
I've been brought up... Sure.
What's your dad's number?
I've been brought up in a really stable home. He's rung in a few times. I'm sure he'd be happy for me to give it to you.
What's his first name?
Ken.
Ken, can you ring me and just tell me I'm awesome?
But I think
I'll put him on a retainer.
We always want the approval and the support of people that matter to us. Like, I would never want to be doing anything if my parents didn't approve of it. And that doesn't mean that I would necessarily change all of my decisions, but it makes me feel better as a person when I know that they're proud of what I do, or they're happy with what I've done, or whatever it is. So one of your key pillars, we have three key pillars in life. One of them, when
we're not liking this, you're making far too much sense, because I like not looking for approval.
Well, when we're talking about, you know, creating those pillars that help us build our self-esteem and our sense of self, one of them is our sense of control. Human beings are control freaks because the number one thing our brain does is it makes us feel safe and helps us stay safe. So when we don't feel in control, we don't feel safe, right? Your second one is your sense of attachment. Attachment to people, to places, to situations, to environments. That's why the psychology of a sports fan is really interesting, because people attach and they feel like they belong, and that's actually very helpful for them if they have no other attachments in their life. And then our other pillar is our sources of motivation, so both pleasure and pain. So all you've done there, to have a little psychology session with you, is you're protecting yourself. You didn't get what you wanted.
Exactly.
And so you're going, well, I'm not doing that again.
That's right. Stamps, foot walks off. We've got to go to a break. She's making far too much sense. I'm quite uncomfortable.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
So good, I got you.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sports. Look, I've got to say sorry, folks. We've got lots of people coming through. We seem to get a rush towards the end now. To our policeman friend from Morwell, I can't read out. I don't want to incriminate you. Well, you didn't say anything bad anyway, but you said something very funny, and I appreciate it. You're a good man. Thanks for the feedback. Just quickly, somebody said, Craig, are you familiar with the school of thinking, Dr. Michael Hewitt Gleason? I am. I actually get emails from him on a regular basis, and I like his stuff. So the school of thinking, that's worth digging up. And a little bit mad at Jackie, because until about, you know, 7 minutes ago, I thought I was completely devoid of the need for approval, but she's explained to me on air and continued through the break, we're not friends anymore, through the break that I'm, in fact, pretty broken and a little bit needy, and I'm in need of approval, and I'm just a lot of other things. That, so back
you
in,
just read
back,
the message the producer put on.
What did she put?
My dad called.
Oh. I love you, Ken, and you might find Ken and I somewhere in Melbourne this week having a coffee and me just hugging him like a pathetic 53-year-old. Thanks very much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back next week. Do you want to plug anything while you're here? You know, just have a moment, your moment in the sun?
Oh, no, just if anyone wants to get in touch, they can come down to Olympic Park Sports Medicine Centre where I am, or follow me on Twitter or Facebook or whatever.
Just quickly, somebody asked about foods that increase inflammation in joints. I think you might mean decrease inflammation. There's a really interesting, when you can't access SEN, you're on a plane or something, listen to a new podcast on Joe Rogan's thing. It's JRE, or Joe Rogan Experience, with Rhonda Patrick. And she talks about this thing called broccoli sprouts, which have got amazing, amazing stuff in them. Thanks to Jackie. Thanks to Big Carl. Thanks to other Jackie. Thanks to me. Thanks to you. Coming up after 11, BP with a first serve until 12, then Sunday Sports Central with Big Kev.